Listen to the land, it has a story for you. About people and their dreams and how they made them come true. Listen to the land, listen to the land.
As you look out over the modern city of Omaha, it's hard to realize that a little more than 100 years ago, this was just a small, struggling village on the Missouri River frontier. Eager men who had left their families behind and come west to get rich roamed the muddy streets. In the 1860s, a man from New York visited Omaha, and he wrote a poem about this wild and lawless town. It was later set to music and became a popular tune in Nebraska.
Have you ever been to Omaha, where flows the dark Missouri down, where four strong horses scarce can pull an empty wagon through the town, where the sand blows down from every mound to fill your eyes and ears and throat, where all the steamers are aground and all the houses are afloat, where the whiskey shops the livelong night are passing out their poison juice, where men are oft a trifle tight and ladies deemed a trifle loose. If you've never been there, hear what I say. You'll find it just as I have found it. So if it lies upon your way, for gosh sake, stranger, go around it.
How did Omaha and Nebraska come into being? Well, to answer this question, we must go back several centuries to the time when little was known about the interior of America, a time when rumors constantly circulated about the mysterious Great Plains. Rumors about the seven cities of gold, about a northwest passage to the Pacific Ocean, about a tribe of Indians descended from people who had left Wales in the British Isles centuries before. Now don't laugh, because you'd be surprised how many people risked life and limb in search for the so-called Welsh Indians. The French were probably the first to enter the Missouri Valley, and by the early 1700s, a trader by the name of Bourgmont had visited the country near the mouth of the Platte River. He called the area Nebraska, from an Indian word meaning flat water. Pause for a moment where you can look out over the Platte River, and you'll see how appropriate was this Indian name. By 1800, Spanish traders were also active in this area, but just as the Spanish were making real headway, Napoleon took over Spanish claims to the Missouri Valley, and eventually he peddled the huge chunk of real estate to the United States. President Jefferson was elated with the Louisiana purchase. He'd been interested in the West for years. Even before Napoleon decided to sell us the land, Jefferson sent a secret message to Congress asking for money to send an expedition into the Missouri country. So you see, even back then, the President and Congress occasionally concealed their actions from the American people. Anyhow, Congress appropriated $2,500, and Jefferson asked Meriwether Lewis and William Clark to lead the expedition. And these capable men quickly assembled their party and headed west. Fortunately for Mr. Jefferson's reputation and the honor of the United States, the Louisiana Purchase was concluded before the expedition reached the Missouri. So Lewis, Clark, and their 45 men had undertaken an incredible task. They were expected to cross thousands of miles of unmapped wilderness. You know, one can't help but compare this expedition with our recent moonshots, which cost millions of dollars and involved thousands of highly trained scientists. Was the Lewis and Clark expedition any less important than our trips to the moon? Well, that's hard to answer, of course, but one thing we can agree on. At $2,500, this was indeed a tremendous bargain. As you view the Missouri River, just try to imagine this small party of men pulling their boats along the shore of the river, fighting their way upstream against the vicious current. In July 1804, after weeks of battling the Big Muddy, the party reached the mouth of the Platte River. Lewis and Clark decided to explore the mysterious river, and here's the entry from the expedition's journal, Saturday, July 21st, 1804. We found great difficulty in passing around the sand at the mouth of the river. went up this great river about 1 mile, found the current very rapid, rolling over sands, passing through different channels, none of them more than 5 or 6 feet deep, about 600 yards wide at the mouth. I am told by one of our party who wintered 2 winters on this river that it is much wider above and does not rise more than 5 or 6 feet, spreads very wide, and from its rapidity and rolling, cannot be navigated with boats. So you see how little this river has changed since Lewis and Clark viewed it in 1804. Now, moving north of the Platte, the explorers made one encampment on a large bluff overlooking the Missouri River. Because they held a conference with some Indians at this camp, they named the spot Council Bluff. The explorers noted that this would be a good place for a fort and a trading post. Of course, Lewis and Clark were not the only men interested in the Missouri River country. Other daring men were moving up the river, too. Among them, Manuel Lisa, one of the most famous fur traders in Nebraska's history. In 1812, Lisa built a trading post at a spot which is just north of present-day Omaha, and Fort Lisa, along with the fur post at Bellevue, was for several years the center of the Western fur trade. By the 1830s, perhaps as many as 1,000 men were trapping and trading in this area, each one scrambling for his share of the rich fur harvest. Back east, people thrilled to the exploits of these men, whose quest for furs took them into that land which lay across the wide Missouri.
Oh, Shenandoah, I hear you calling. Way, you rolling river. Oh, Shenandoah, I hear you calling. Way, we're bound away across the wide Missouri.
In the early 1820s, the Indians up in the Dakotas went on the warpath and closed the Missouri River to white traders. Many men concluded that this finished the fur trade, but a man by the name of William H. Ashley was not ready to call it quits, and he decided to send his men up the Platte Valley in order to reach the mountain fur country. Ashley's men quickly demonstrated that this was a feasible route, and several parties carried supplies in carts and wagons, the first vehicles on what was to become in a few years the road to Oregon. The center of the fur trade shifted from the Missouri River to the Rocky Mountains, and the Platte Valley served as the highway of the colorful and famous mountain men. In 1818, President Monroe decided that steps must be taken to protect American interests in the Western fur trade. Congress appropriated money to outfit a large expedition to be sent up the Missouri River. The Yellowstone Expedition, as it was called in the newspapers of the day, included something over 1,000 men. But more important, the men were transported by steamboats, then a newfangled invention. Like all new inventions, the steamboat had some bugs. And only one out of the 6 steamboats, the Western Engineer, made it up the river to Council Bluff. Here in 1820, the troops erected Fort Atkinson, the first military post on the northern plains. In the same year, Major Stephen H. Long led a party of scientists west from the post, and they traveled along the Platte Valley to the Rocky Mountains. After their return to Washington, members of the party pooled their information, and they drew a map of this region. They labeled the entire stretch of country between the Missouri River and the Rocky Mountains as the Great American Desert. Let the official report of the expedition tell us what these men thought of Nebraska. We have little apprehension of giving too unfavorable an account of this portion of the country. Though the soil is in some places fertile, the want of timber, of navigable streams, and of water for the necessities of life render it unfit residence for any but a nomad population. The traveler who shall at any time have traversed this desolate land will, we think, join us in the wish that this region may forever remain the unmolested haunt of the native hunter, the bison, and the jackal. Well, in a sense, that's you, because you are now traveling what this generation called the Great American Desert. Not everyone considered the Great American Desert to be totally worthless. There were those, for example, who said it'd be a great place to stick the Indians. Since white men would never want to own these worthless lands, there would never be any reason for white men and red men to fight over it. For a few years, the federal government followed the policy of making the Western Plains permanent Indian country. White men, traders, farmers, speculators were to keep out unless they were given permission to enter the land. The government encouraged missionaries to come to Indian country, and in 1833, two Baptist missionaries, Mr. and Mrs. Moses Merrill, built a mission station and school near the mouth of the Platte River. If you want to risk some rough back roads, you can still see the chimney and fireplace remaining from the mission station they built. Devoted though they were, the Merrills were not successful with the Indians. In addition to the problems which arose from dealing with people of a totally different culture, the Merrills found it almost impossible to keep the Indians from purchasing whiskey from the traders over at Bellevue. Of course, the government prohibited the sale of whiskey to the Indians, but the traders laughed at the law. On December 27, 1834, a frustrated, angry Mr. Merrill wrote these words in his diary. "This is not the house of God nor the gate of heaven. It is rather the house of Satan and the gate of hell. During the past night, the house has been in a bustle. So far as I could judge, whiskey was bought and drank by the poor Indians. Several Indians at the house were so drunk, and one complained that the whiskey was bad because he had drunk plentifully without becoming intoxicated. The laws of the land are thus set at defiance. They will trade their horses, guns, and even their blankets for this poisonous drink, while a missionary is compelled to witness the sad consequences of this traffic and the souls and bodies of these heathens." Although the missionaries left little permanent mark upon this country, one religious group did play a vital role in Nebraska's history. These were the Mormons. The Mormon Church was founded in New York by Joseph Smith. But wherever these people lived, they were subjected to persecution. Smith was finally lynched by a mob in Illinois, and the church leaders decided to head west in search of a place where their people could live in peace. Brigham Young led the way, and in 1846, a party of Mormons crossed the Missouri River and established winter quarters. For the next few years, this small town was the jumping-off place for thousands of Mormons heading for Deseret, the Mormon haven in the valley of the Great Salt Lake. Among the Mormons were many so-called handcart pioneers who piled their belongings in two-wheeled carts, which were pushed and pulled over plains and mountains to Utah.
Ye saints who dwell on Europe's shore, prepare yourselves for many more. To leave behind your native land, for sure God's judgments are at hand. And some must push and some must pull as we go marching up the hill. So merrily on our way we go until we reach the valley. Oh.